Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And this is Sell or Die,
real world
sales talk, no bullshit, no tricks.
We are interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development, and we're doing it live. Why do we do it live? Because you make sales live.
That's
in the
right.
Moment. There's no pre-taping your sales presentation.
We're taking your sales questions live. Send them to us on Facebook. You can just like put a comment on the
post.
And
did we mention live?
But if you're listening to the podcast version, send your question by email to sellordie@gittimer.com. And we'll answer them next week. We're here to help you with any sales problem.
And believe me, you have problems. Now, reading every single one of your questions is the man behind the glass, our producer, the one and only, the great Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
You can't see me, but I'm always here. Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer.
He is always here.
And I'm always excited, especially this week, because we are live on Facebook. If you are out there listening to us on our podcast feed, that's great. It's a great way to listen to this show anytime on iTunes. Just search Sell or Die. Maybe you're at the gym. Maybe you're coming home from work. Listen to us anytime. Just go to iTunes, search Sell or Die. But I would encourage you, if you can join us live every Wednesday at 6 o'clock p.m., do it, because you can comment and be part of the show. Okay, Jeffrey, Jennifer, what's going on in your sales world?
Tell them, Jen.
Well, I just
got back. Come on, Jen, we're live on Facebook.
All right. I just got back from New York this morning. I was doing a LinkedIn workshop in New York City yesterday, ran my networking meeting yesterday with 50 plus people. It was amazing.
Cool.
And now I have a busy week with more presentations.
Oh, wait.
Wait, who is here?
On our first.
A little visitor. Hello.
Our first Facebook Live visitor.
For those of you who are just listening and not watching.
Is the great Gabrielle Gittimer. And she is.
How old are you?
Seven.
You have to say
Seven.
It louder.
Seven.
7 years old. And where do you go to school?
Trinity Episcopal.
And are you a happy girl?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You're a happy girl. Okay. And do you want to say anything to the salespeople out there in the world?
No.
Okay. No. That would be a no. But I wanted you to appear on the very first show so you could see this 20 years later and see what you used to look like. Is that cool?
Yes.
Okay. Now, where are you going to go now? iPad or iPhone?
Phone.
Phone. Okay. Go.
Okay.
Go.
Bye, Thank Gabrielle. You, Gabrielle. Thank you. Thank you for my bunny ears. She was planning that a long time.
Oh, to be a kid again. Actually, you should quote the great Woody Allen there. You're only young once, but you can always be immature. So I want to make a major announcement. I finished a negotiation today with Jim Fowler, the founder and CEO of Owler. Many of you subscribe to Owler. If you don't know about it, it's the outsourced competitive intelligence platform. And get this number, that 800,000 business professionals use to outsmart their competition, gain competitive insights, and, like I do, uncover the latest industry news and alerts. I've been subscribing for 2 years. I read it every single day without fail. You can sign up for free on Owler.com, O-W-L-E-R.com, and follow me. You'll see my name there, Jeffrey Gittimer, and click on the yellow star by my profile, and you will automatically receive my latest video sales tips and ordinary sales tips, along with insights relevant to your business. It's unbelievable what it does, and you need to go to Owler.com right now
and
sign up.
Well, if you're not on Owler and your competition is, you're screwed.
You have a huge competitive disadvantage.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, my Facebook is facebook.com/ my whole name, Jeffrey Gittimer, all one word. That's my public page. And you can go on the show right now, post comments, ask questions, do whatever you want. But I would recommend that you go there just to hang out and have a good time.
Yeah. And mine is Facebook/Jen in any minute. It's really in a New York minute, but, you know, just to make it simple, Jen in any minute.
You did it Jen in any minute because people couldn't spell New York?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Or so the state abbreviation.
Okay. That's part of the deal. All right. Now, We have a great show today. It's about a very important topic and a topic that's being talked about a lot right now, ethics, or as we want to say, sales ethics, because sales ethics are in the news, literally in front of the Congress of the United States. And I don't want to mention any banks because it wouldn't be fair to Wells Fargo, but they are getting grilled by the United States Senate. And in my opinion, it's just starting.
Oh, yeah. And Eric Chester, who's a workplace culture and ethics expert. Ooh, that's a tongue twister.
Say that three times.
Workplace culture and ethics expert is going to join us later to discuss what workplace ethics is, what it isn't, and what you should do if you get caught in an unethical conundrum.
So let's get to it. It's time to sell or die live. So why do ethics, or why do an ethics show now? Why do one now? Well, I'm sure you've all heard about the recent scandal surrounding one of the largest banks in the world, Wells Fargo, and maybe you need a quick primer. So Jenny is going to tell you what went on behind the scenes at Wells Fargo that has their customers upset and their lawmakers on the march.
Okay, so if you don't know, you may live under a rock, but let's just do a recap. Wells Fargo sales reps opened fake accounts under real customers' names without their permission.
One of them mine.
One of them was Jeffrey Gitomer's. That is correct. He was a victim. As many as 2 million accounts since 2011 in order to hit unrealistically high quotas set by management. Management who knew they couldn't reach those quotas.
Let's define management, including their defrocked and disgraced CEO and chairman of the board.
Okay. 5,300 people were fired. The bank was fined $185 million. And John Sumpf is retiring in disgrace. Sales reps were in a high-pressure environment that incentivized them highly. It highly incentivized them to sell additional accounts to customers when they couldn't. And when they didn't hit their commission goals, they were reprimanded.
They refer to it as cross-selling. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have an account that might be a certificate of deposit or a checking account, and they want to open up another investment account for you or some other kind of safety deposit box or get another credit card or whatever, something to get more fees from every customer.
Right. So they opened up these fake accounts. Crazy. And then when people tried to blow the whistle on them and tried to say, oh, something's wrong here. This is not right. This is unethical.
Their own employees.
Yep. They were fired. Dun, dun, dun. Can you believe
dun,
that?
Dun, dun.
That is insane. Okay, so Jeffrey, that's a lot to parse through, but one thing is clear. Salespeople acted unethically. Sales management acted unethically, and now they're paying the price.
Yeah, let me just say this. Salespeople were forced to act unethically.
You know,
they were guided
I don't
to act.
They maybe were guided, but they were not forced. Do you think someone held a gun to their head and said,
no,
you
but
have
somebody
to open
said, this is your
account?
Quota. And salespeople go fight for their quotas. And maybe they went home at night. I'm going to give you the insight before the show is over. And I want you to all stay tuned for this. I'm going to give you the insight about ethics and a test for ethics that if you can pass this test, everything you do is ethical. Now, of course, the Bank of America immediately came out and says, oh, we're ethical. Oh, seriously? Let me give you some of that bullshit. They've been fined hundreds of millions of dollars for their interest practices, for their, you know, they're all unethical. You name a bank and I'll show you an unethical bank. What they're saying is that their sales practices are ethical. Their business practices are scurrilous.
Yeah. What do you think causes salespeople to all of a sudden ignore ethics? Like, how could you grow up?
They want to make a quota. They have to, their boss has given them an unrealistic quota. They're trying to figure out everything they can possibly do to make that quota. They will take shortcuts. They will sign contracts for people that haven't signed the contracts yet. They will force people to make a decision. They'll do anything they have to do in order to A, keep their income, and B, keep their job, and maybe their boss's job. But I think that you can't ignore the principles. You have to put yourself in a position where you have to be proud of your work. Do you think the people that opened up hundreds of phony accounts with their existing customers. Do you think they're proud of that?
No. How could they even sleep at night? Talk about not. Let's not even talk about proud. How could they live with themselves?
Well, they live with their income.
I don't understand that. All right. So you can learn plenty more about sales ethics on the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's GittimerLearningAcademy.com. But we've got a preview of one of the many lessons you can get by signing up on GittimerLearningAcademy.com. Take a look.
Roll it, Newton.
Or a listen.
Principle 31. You become known by the actions you take. Take ethical actions. Patterson said there was a time when all successful salesmen were liars. That time has passed. He said that 100 years ago. I'm going to add to that by saying, you are more known and judged for your deeds and your actions than for your words. What is ethical? Who decides that? Use the 5.5 question acid test during the presentation. Number one, is this the best or is this in the best long-term interest of the customer? Number two, is this in the best long-term interest of my company? Number three, is this in the best long-term interest of my career? Number four, if I were the probable purchaser, would I buy? Number five, is this something that would make my mother proud? And number 5.5, am I telling the truth? These 5.5 questions are at the heart of ethics in the selling process and the heart of ethics in any business. They must be asked every time a business interaction takes place and every time a sale is being proposed. Patterson knew 100 years ago the importance of ethics in business and wanted his people to portray a trusting, pleasing, and earnest image. My experience has shown me that if you have to say what you are, you probably aren't. Think about this for just a moment. I'm honest, I'm ethical, even I'm the decision maker. I'm the boss or I'm in charge. Usually indicates just the opposite, doesn't it? There are easy ways to measure the results of your ethics. Can you sell that same customer again? Has the customer referred you to another customer without being asked to do so? Get proof of your ethics. Get better or get out. Remember the movie Pinocchio and Jiminy Cricket on the shoulder of Pinocchio? His thought-provoking song, "Always Let Your Conscience Be Your Guide," you can probably sing the chorus right now, was a statement of shunning bad ethics. Didn't you already know what he was going to say? And don't you already know what to do? You don't need to ask yourself about ethics. You simply need to take ethical actions from what you already know. If you have any questions, call your mother. So think about this for just a second. I think everybody should download that video somehow or the other. You'll have to do it at the Gittimer Learning Academy. You keep that on your desktop and play that every single morning before you go out on a sales call like it's a mantra.
I just like hearing you sing. That's fun.
Yeah, always let your conscience be your guide.
Yeah, that was fun. Okay, so we have some comments that are coming in on your Facebook wall, Jeffrey.
All right, Doug. Doug, what's going on?
Yeah, we've got a few comments here from Keith. Keith says, Gittimer is the man. We got somebody from Italy. This is an international show, guys. Ciao from Italy. And this is from Jeffrey's Facebook page. We'll get to some comments later. If you're watching on Jen's Facebook page, we'll promise we're coming to get your comments. We do have a question here for both of you. Favorite sales books that you did not write?
Cool. How to Sell Your Way to Success by Napoleon Hill, published in 1939. That's my personal favorite sales book of all time. I don't think there's anything that can even compare to it, other than maybe Creative Selling by Elmer Letterman in 1949.
There's a different Elmer Letterman book that I read recently that has become one of my favorites.
Shoot.
I'm forgetting the name.
The sale begins when the customer says
yes.
No. Thanks.
Now, Elmer Letterman was a... I forget names of books and movies.
He's an insurance salesperson in New York City who only sold to celebrities. That was his shtick.
But he didn't start out that way.
No.
He started out as a regular sales guy, and he worked his way up, and it's really cool.
And he realized where his income would rise, and he just went after that market. but he let one person tell another person tell another person because he was so outrageous. He was so congenial. He was so friendly. He was so engaging. And he was so honest.
That's the deal.
Oh, yeah. He was ethical.
And we have someone asking, Lon is asking, what is that website? GittimerLearningAcademy.com. Make sure you head over there after the show. Find out more about the future of sales training. And guys, you'll agree with this. Training is central to stopping the types of ethics problems that Wells Fargo experienced.
There's an assessment that you can take. There is a you can become Gittimer Sales Certified. And then you take hundreds and hundreds of lessons.
Oh, wow. You're showing it on the screen. I know, that's so cool. That's way to go. I love that.
That's the cool thing about Facebook Live.
Yeah, I love this. This is way cool.
This is, damn, this is amazing. Once you dive
into one of those topics, there is so much content and it is all really good.
I think the main thing here is that we are breaking ground. Doug, how many sales blogs, how many sales podcasts are live on Facebook that you know of?
That I know of, maybe one.
Okay. And
maybe one.
That might be ours?
Well, that's ours. Maybe one. I'll be honest. There may be one out there. I don't want to say zero.
Okay. But we're trying to break ground. We're trying to be at the forefront. And we're trying to help you the best we possibly can.
I'll say this. None that are as dynamic and play video.
We're top of the game right now.
And did you see that video I just played?
Come on, am I good looking there or what? What were they doing with that camera? Like, I was impressed.
All right, so Jeffrey, do you want to introduce our guest?
No.
You don't want to introduce our guest?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Okay, I should go back. Listen, make sure that you head over to the GittimerLearningAcademy.com, GittimerLearningAcademy, all one word, .com, and do it after the show, but find out about the future of sales training. Whether you're a manager or an individual salesperson, you can subscribe and have a little bit of me to take with you wherever you go. Now, let's introduce Eric. Eric Chester has been a friend of mine for a long, long time, but he's been researching, writing, and speaking on workplace culture and ethics for three decades, even though he doesn't look it. Yeah. In 2004, he was inducted into the Speakers Hall of Fame. He's frequently interviewed by national media, Good Morning America, ABC News, 2020, CNN. You probably never heard of these people. Forbes, Huffington Post, USA Today, MSNBC, Fox News, to provide insights on work ethic, employee engagement, and workforce development. Here he is, the one, the only, my friend, the great Eric Chester.
You see, we have all been idle. We have all been lucky, and we've all cheated. Don't tell me you haven't. If you've driven 1 mile an hour over the posted speed limit, you've cheated. And for those of you angels in here who say, well, I've never done that. Have you ever torn a tag off a mattress or a pillow? Because it clearly says on there, do not remove under penalty of the law. Where we want is, we want our people to know what to do and to do it. And that's where the leadership part happens. Because that's what you and I are, my friends. And that's our call.
We've been talking about workplace culture for a while, and you have been an expert at workplace culture for going on 20 years. How do you define it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, culture has many aspects. You know, culture is the way business is done around a certain place. I mean, you have a family culture, you have a neighborhood culture, you have a workplace culture. I mean, there's neighborhood cultures. Took my grandkids out trick-or-treating. We went to a special area where people were outside, dressed in costumes, sitting on their porches, passing out candy, and you went, this neighborhood has a culture. It's the way things are done around here. Everybody says, hey, let's do this. If you moved into that neighborhood, you would take that same aspect, regardless of what you think of Halloween. Now, you'd sit there and you'd say, I want to be a part of this because this is how things are done. It's the same thing in a business. How does business get done? There's a lot of tangibles, a lot of intangibles that create that kind of culture. It's just you step in, you go, hey, this is what's going on here. Same thing in a high school, in a church, in a synagogue, in a community, no matter where it is. That the culture is just, this is how we do things around here.
So what's missing from workplace culture?
Well, it depends on what workplace culture you're talking about, Jennifer. I mean, You know, there's very few, you know, businesses have the identical culture as somebody else. I mean, we've all worked in places where you step in and you go, hey, this is great. I like this. It fits me. This is I get it. I'm going to, you know, step in and do things the way they're done around here. But I think in today's workplace culture, you have a lot of environments that are, you know, focused on just one thing only, you know, the almighty dollar, you know, churn and burn. They do that with their employees. They do that. Just how can we make a buck today? And what happens is they leave the humanity side out of it. They don't care about the long-term results. You know, how can we get 5% same store sales growth next year? How can we, you know, bump up our stock price so we can just hurry and turn this? And then the people just get brutalized in the process.
So has the definition of sales ethics changed over the last few years or the next generation that's entering into sales?
I don't know if the definition has changed, Jeffrey. I mean, ethics is ethics. Ethics is, you know, is you look it up. I mean, it comes from the Latin word ethos, and it's what you know to be true and right in your heart. And, you know, it's your set of moral beliefs. It's whatever. So I don't know that the definition of sales ethics has changed. I think the practice of sales ethics has changed. Mm-hmm. I think we see a lot of different people, you have a lot of people trying to define it on their own terms. You know, I mean, we see that a lot. And that's probably the scary thing is that when all of a sudden it's defined around a certain term, then that becomes the culture. That's how we're doing things around here. And then things just completely come off the tracks.
So has the way you're teaching ethics changed? Because it seems like people are practicing ethics differently now. So how are you talking about ethics differently or teaching about it differently?
Well, I you know, Jennifer, it's not that I'm out there teaching, you know, here's how to be ethical. My whole take on, when it came to ethic was what is this thing called work ethic? Because, you know, I work with a lot of companies and organizations that, you know, employ a large amount of the emerging workforce. The emerging workforce, you can define them as millennials or, you know, cut the definition in a number of different ways. The emerging workforce is changing. People who are employing other people know, boy, things have changed. People have changed. What they want out of work, career, et cetera, has changed. So what does that mean when it comes to work ethic? And specifically when it comes to you're looking at people who are just making their way into the workplace, you might go, well, what is their work ethic? What is it that I need to do now to in terms of helping these people get onboarded and produce the way they should produce, as what I used to be able to do. I mean, in days gone by, you'd assume somebody came in with a good work ethic. You go way back. They grew up in an agrarian society on a farm. They knew that they had to, you know, the chickens weren't going to feed themselves. They had to work every single day. It was an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in today's day and age, we have a lot of people coming into the workplace that have never worked before. What I'm saying now, whether it's coming out of a prestigious university, you know, their parents have paid their way the whole time. They've spent time in a classroom. They studied. They may have all the talent in the world, but in terms of really understanding what it takes to work, they don't get it. And then you look at the opposite end of that. There are so few teenagers actually working in the workplace today, whether that's because they grew up in a rich neighborhood and parents taking care of all their financial needs, or they grew up in a very poor neighborhood and they can't find those jobs. Now we're talking about raising minimum wage. And so, you know, companies are forced to use technology and bringing in, you know, more experienced people. And so a lot of people just don't learn to work anymore. So my take is coming in and helping organizations really understand that work ethic, the ethic of work has changed. And yes, that is the ethic of honesty, one of those pillars, one of those values that seems to have disappeared, or at least, you know, boy, you don't see a lot of it anymore.
So, Eric, you have obviously been paying attention to the news every once in a while. I don't know where you bank, but I can tell you where I used to bank. I used to bank at Wells Fargo, and they have basically redefined ethics in the sales culture probably for the next 10 years, maybe more. Somebody woke up one day and said, hey, let's create 1 million fake accounts. And somebody else said, nah, let's make it 2 million Do you think that vice president woman who walked away with $100 million could have called her mom and said, hey, Ma, guess what I did yesterday? I opened up a million fake accounts. Are you proud of me, Ma? I mean, seriously?
What's your take on it?
Yeah, what's your take on that one?
Well, first of all, Jeffrey, you're very forthcoming saying you used to bank at Wells Fargo. Well, I mean, in full openness, I still bank at Wells Fargo. But there's a reason, right? Am I very disappointed with the decisions that have happened from a leadership position? And the answer is absolutely. Mm-hmm. My accounts directly were not affected. And I have a very special relationship with a private banker at Wells Fargo,
okay,
who I believe in my heart of heart would never participate in anything like this.
However, if that banker left and went to Bank of America, would you follow the banker or stay at Wells Fargo?
I would follow the banker.
Exactly. So you're not banking at Wells Fargo. You're banking with
that banker. Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
You know, and you know as well as I do, Jeffrey, that, I mean, changing banks is a enormously difficult thing. It just is. I mean, you know, your relationship. So I'm not saying let's say it was easy. If it's as easy as, you know, hey, I'm gonna pass this convenience store and go to the next one because this convenience store screwed me over. You know, I'm gonna go to this. But that's a very simple decision. Moving banks is hard. So again, in full disclosure, if it were much easier to move, would I have thought about it twice? Have I been too busy? Am I just, you know, hey, you can't see it from my house because I didn't get affected? All of those things probably
play a role. I love can't see it from my house. I love that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Can't see it. So, but here's the reality is that in the process, what stemmed down from a cultural, this is how we're doing things, has affected not only the people who bank at Wells Fargo, but they have 265,000 employees. There's not 265,000 bad people out there.
No.
That, you know, hey, what it is it's a virus. It starts infecting itself into the workplace. And how does it affect culture? Well, the definition, this is how we do things around here. So you come into that kind of a sales culture and people are saying, hey, you can make a lot more money if you do this. Granted, nobody's going to get hurt in the process. You can't see them. Again, you can't see them from our house. I mean, if it ever comes up, we'll just turn around and say, oops, sorry, oversight here. Let us send you, you know, a Starbucks gift card and we'll be friends.
Exactly.
And that's
bullshit.
The reality. So everybody turns a blind eye as long as it seems like it's working. You know, it's with all the scandals, they don't start out going, you know, Enron, it is a, hey, let's just defraud millions of people. I know, let's just cook the books. It starts out with, you know what? It's okay. We bend it just a little bit.
I'll just say this. More. It's a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. That lady had no idea.
Yeah, you want to write that down somewhere, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
So, but the challenge is that woman who ordered everybody to do cheating things didn't realize that she was in quicksand. She thought she was on flat ground and she's been there for 10 years and, you know, she can't do anything wrong. But let me take it further. You bank there, but you're not going to wear their T-shirt anymore. And you're not going to tell both of your friends to go bank at Wells Fargo. What you're going to do is kind of keep it to yourself. It's not a braggable issue anymore. Like, I bank at Wells Fargo because they're the greatest bank in the world.
Yeah, you're not proud.
No, I bank with Bob Jones. And if unfortunately, Bob is at Wells Fargo, but he's a great guy, and you should sit down and talk to him. But you're going to make an excuse for the fact that he's at Wells Fargo.
And you're exactly right. All the way to Wells Fargo has a lot of damage control to do.
For years. They'll be doing it for years.
They have lost more goodwill in a week than people tried to build for 100 years.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, well, what happened to Ford Motor Company with the Pinto? What happened to Volkswagen with the, you know, changing the testing on their emissions control, all of that stuff.
This is people's money, Eric.
It's people's money.
Yeah. And their credit.
Yeah.
Their reputation.
It is. And it's a huge deal. It is an enormous deal. I'm not trying to sidestep it. I can't, you know, be on a phone call talking about ethics and say, you're right, I've left Wells Fargo when I haven't. And it is a judgment that is still being made. I just personally hate to take business away from someone who has been so good to me, mm-hmm. and go, because you work for this bank and this bank levels that you don't, that's my personal thing. But you're darn right, Jeffrey. It is jacked with people's money. They have really ruined their brand. And in the process, not just the consumers, you know, it's not just it's going to happen to their stock prices and what have you. The innocent bystanders, the people probably most affected, are the 260,000 really good, honest people who would never do anything like this that yeah. are now in Wells Fargo.
Those I think a lot of them are jumping ship. A lot of them are trying to find a new
so
home.
So I'm one of the guys. They sent me a credit card, and I didn't ask for it. And they sent the bill to the wrong address. So we didn't get the bills, and we didn't make the payments, because I think it was just like a regular a card of
you
mine.
Thought like a card had expired and they yeah. sent you a new card. You yeah. didn't realize it was actually like a new card that you didn't actually apply for.
And now while they wiped away the credit, they filed against me on the credit bureau. So they pretty much changed that. So I call the quote office of the president. You know what that means, right? There's a bunch of minimum wage people sitting around and bullshitting about that they represent the president of Wells Fargo, who, by the way, was fired in disgrace, although they called it resigned.
Yeah, exactly.
And they won't do a thing. They think they did nothing wrong. They have no concept of recovery.
They're not taking ownership from it. They're not even apologizing for it.
They said, well, it looks like it's okay to us. It looked like it was an open account. We sent it. We didn't do anything wrong. Therefore, we're not doing it. We're not going to apologize for it.
Let me ask you a question, Jeffrey. Okay. So we're full disclosure. Let's just say that you bank at U.S. Bank or BB&T or somewhere else, or you bank at Wells Fargo, and guess what? You're like me. It didn't affect you.
Right.
Are you still, at this particular, are you this angry? Because you've had to go through, you've been personally affected.
I'm going to tell you what I would be. I would be disappointed and embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I would have a meeting with my banker and say, what do you think is our best course? How do I refer you now? What's the best thing that I can do for your career now that you're kind of stuck in a place that used to be cool and now it's not that cool?
Yeah, but if his banker is this trustworthy person that he's describing, it's likely he's looking for another bank to work at.
Oh, yeah.
No one wants to be associated, even the employees, especially the employees who are truthful and honest. They don't want to be there anymore. They don't want that reputation.
I think they walk in kind of ashamed. And I think your banker is probably one of those people who's like, oh, man, why did this have to happen? Because he's probably been there more than a decade. He's probably dedicated his career to it. And now he has to work in a place where people go, you work for Wells Fargo? Seriously?
And they question his ethics.
Take it a step further. When you walk in, it's a female, by the way, and on her shelf are a series of awards from Wells Fargo, given to her by John Stumpf for being one of the outstanding leaders in her. So now
I somehow think John didn't know that he gave her the award. I'm not sure.
But here's the thing: what does that mean?
Right.
You know what would that mean? One of my best friends in this world, I'm not going to mention his name, has a great book out. Right.
What's it rhyme with?
His book. His book is endorsed on the front cover by John Stumpf.
Oh, not good.
I thought you sit turn around and you go, okay, so what do you do? You know, what is it that, how all of a sudden do you become, you know, you go from, wow, that is one from, and you know, Jeffrey, great endorsements are hard to get.
Very hard
to get.
You
get the CEO saying, this is the best book. This is the greatest.
No, the CEO and the chairman of the board. Yeah. I mean, this guy was
like that on the cover of your book. And now all of a sudden the guy is disgraced. And everyone's going, really? Ooh. I mean, you go down in a hurry.
I think what you have to do is go to every airport in America with a crayon and scratch out John Stumpf's name in crayon and write in like Alfred E. Newman.
We're like,
what
you need white out.
Yeah, white out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say you are one of those employees at Wells and you know what's going on. How do you deal with the situation when you look around and you see your colleagues, some of them your friends, engaging in unethical practices. What do you tell people to do?
You know, Jennifer, that is a brilliant question. Of course, all of us would say, hey, blow the whistle, stand up, be the person, and get fired. So you do the right thing. Everybody else is going to do it. You're going to wind up on the outside looking in. What do you do? How do you handle it? Of course, each and every one of us say, well, what you should do is, yeah, the question is,
that's bullshit. You find another job. That's the best thing to do. Just go someplace else. Let them rot your own hell.
Exactly. You turn around and go, look, this is not right. And yes, will I blow the whistle? Will I jump in? You know, how is it being packaged and sold? I'm opening up a false account for somebody else. There's no right way to do a wrong thing. You can justify it any way in the world. You can say, here's what we're doing. But here's the question we all have to ask ourselves individually, right? When it comes to right or wrong, no matter what it is, would I do this for my best friend? Would I do this for one of my kids? For my
would
parents?
I tell my mom? Would I brag to my mom that this is what I did?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, right now, if there was a knock at my door and, you know, 60 Minutes is there saying, well, I'm going to talk to you about that action right there. You're going to say, oh, great. This is super. This is really going to help me. Or, oh, my God, please turn off the cameras.
Yeah.
You know, you got to ask yourself those questions. And any time when it comes down to this is a, I have a friend that, you know, I hate to use that. I had a friend who ran a very successful business for a while. It was a family business. He got in a dispute with his father. He took some money. He went out on his own. And he started something that was called the American Fair Credit Association. The whole idea was to take people who were bankrupt, people who were really struggling, and get them a credit card. Well, you can't sell somebody a credit card. So he created an association. And the association was, you pay $29, $39 a month. I forget what it was. This is back in the late 90s. You take this credit card you join this association and you get 17 benefits. And one of those benefits was, by the way, you get a credit card. So you got like prescription eye care to them. The 17, I'll use Jeffrey's word, bullshit benefits.
Wait a minute, I didn't coin that word.
There you go. But you broke the profanity barrier, so I'm jumping right in.
Oh, yeah, we're rated E. It's all good.
Yeah.
So here's the reality. The reality is one of the benefits was you also got a credit card. Now, it was $300 secured. You'd have to put $300 in their bank, and then you'd have a $300 line of credit. But he sold this to people, and millions of people did it. This guy had a house on the cover of Architectural Digest. He made $20 million a year contributing. Okay, you stand back and you go, wait a second. My parents, and this is true, my parents died penniless and broke. They made very bad decisions in the last part of their lives. They were entrepreneurs, the printing business, and they just went under. They never automated. They went under. Okay, so my parents are really struggling. When I say, hey, mom, dad, I tell you, you've got to join AFCA. Pay $29. Of course not.
Right.
It was a scam to
That's
a millionth
terrible.
Degree. And so what wound up happening is, I couldn't sleep with this. I literally went to a therapist and said, what are you doing? And they said, it's very profound. Sometimes the horse wins. Do you know, Jennifer, how many times I think of that? You look out there and you go, hey, sometimes the horse wins.
They've been winning on the street for a long time.
Yeah, and guess what? And they can get away with it. We'd love to tell our kids that crime doesn't pay, justice always prevails, the good guy rides off at the end of the movie with the white hat, you know, gets the damsel in distress and everybody cheers.
Yep.
Our society is no longer like that. And as a result, you've got a lot of people who are doing, I don't know what his final paycheck will be, but John Stump, he's probably going to avoid a jail sentence, and he's going to be calling ship to shore from some exotic island somewhere.
Yeah.
So what happened?
And a lot of damsels are still in distress. Just put it that way.
Yeah. Yep.
Like
exactly.
2 million of them.
Yeah.
It's not right. And you can be mad as hell. And the reality is, but people are still getting away with it.
Okay, last thing. Think about the fact that you're in a situation and you see something unethical going on. We've agreed that the person should get another job, correct?
Right.
rather than risk blowing a whistle and being fired. But the way they leave, I think, is important. They need to have the other job secure.
Mm-hmm.
They need to go into their boss and said, I'm going to blow the whistle in this place, but you can't fire me because I just fired myself. Today's my last day. Here's my keys. Here's my computer password. Goodbye. And leave. Then blow the whistle. Because you can't, I mean, ethically, if you can't live with yourself, you blow your own whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And I fired myself. Who's going to say anything wrong about that? And then you go start your own job and let them wallow in their own shit. And the people that complain about the fact that they blew the whistle and got fired, I think it's their own fault. I don't think they should have blown the whistle. I think they should have just quit and left and go someplace else.
I'm going to talk about that after I was in that situation and I left. And
that's what you do.
But let's throw out one reminder here. And that is, we can all see right now the depth of the people that have been hurt, the hundreds of millions of dollars. But it starts with a small little action.
Yep. Yeah.
And the reality is all of us have to ask ourselves in the workplace. It's not like, okay, I've seen this person and what they're doing. They're defrauding people of millions of dollars. Stop. If you deprive one client of one nickel, you do one thing, that's where it starts. And you've got to have the cojones then to stand up. Because what happens if you turn your back then, that will permeate and a little thing becomes a big thing. And the next thing you know, you turned your blind eye to somebody losing a nickel. Well, yeah, now it's only a quarter. Then it's a buck. Then it's $100. Big deal. Then it's five people. That's
and
nothing.
Then, right.
And so that's where it starts. And the reality is they don't start at these huge scams. It doesn't start that way. If you can, I can guarantee you the VP that did this, they didn't think one day, hey, everybody, let's do this. It started out. There was a test. There was a beta test. Can we get away with it? Can we do it with a few people? Will they know? And that's where it starts. And somebody knew. Her admin, a couple of people in her department. It wasn't a, hey, let's just do this on a massive scale today.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work like
that. Well, how you described it at the beginning was exactly right. It's like a virus. You know, it starts out small, and then it just keeps compounding, getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Absolutely.
So, Eric, thank you so much. I think we're out of time for now, but thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again on our show. It was a real pleasure having you on.
After the fallout finishes from Wells Fargo, we'll have you back on again and talk about what really happened.
Oh, yeah.
My pleasure, guys. Hey, keep blowing the whistle on what's going on out there. In the sales culture, it's so easy to make a quick sale today but the reality is it catches up with you sooner or later. Thank you for being the beacon of light, and we need it. So keep doing what you're doing. Thanks so much for having me as a guest on your show, Jennifer and Jeffrey. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again to Eric Chester. You can find out more about him at his website, ericchester.com, and go buy all of his books on Amazon. Now, we have some comments and posts and likes and stuff that we want to read from our Facebooks. Jeffrey, I'm looking at your Facebook. You're blowing up. There is, let's see, Mary Marzari from...
Just get first names.
All right. Mary is all the way out in Tel Aviv right now.
Ooh, what's she doing over there?
I know. And, you know, when you asked what's he doing up so late, he said, ciao, Jeffrey Gittimer, working hard, of course, while listening to your live videos. Thanks for sharing. Look forward to your next live.
All right. That's phenomenal. I do want to say one thing about the Eric Chester interview. You may think that ethics don't apply to you, but I will guarantee you that there are people in your company that ethics should apply to. And your job is not to confront them. Simply confront yourself. And ask, is this the environment that I want to spend the rest of my career in? Or should I try to fix it? Or should I try to find an ethical environment? Totally up to you.
Yeah, you have to make that decision for
sure.
But let's go back to these comments, Jeffrey, because this is really cool. This is the first time we're doing this live.
I agree.
So Matthew Murray asks, when is the next one scheduled so I can share and tell people about it?
Ooh.
We're going to be doing these live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're joining from another time zone, just figure out what time that is for you. But for us, it's 6 p.m.
Look
Wednesdays.
Look how they put your name up there and everything.
I know, that's so cool.
I think that's part of production. I think that Doug is like behind all this
stuff. And if you miss a show, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Sell or Die. And if you don't have iTunes, you can go to Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die.
And so all of the back shows will be on there audio only. But if you want to watch this show and the future shows on video, can they find us on YouTube, Doug?
Yeah, YouTube. We'll post these to both of your YouTube accounts.
Okay, cool. So just search like Gittimer.
Yeah, search Sales in a New York Minute, and this will pop up. And Jennifer, you have a story for us.
Okay, so let me tell you what happened to me. So before I started my company, I was in my own ethical conundrum. I joined a company.
Conundrum, I love that.
I know. Yeah. It's the word of the night. So I joined a company as their COO, and I was reporting to the CEO, and he was also the business owner. And note, I do not have their name anywhere associated with me. It's not on my LinkedIn. It's nowhere. And to tell you would be unethical. So don't try to figure it out. And I was there, and all of a sudden I knew how much money we were bringing in, cause I was in charge of all the revenue too. And one day he comes to me and he says, I need you to tell all of our 1099 employees that we can't pay them this week. I said, really? Why? And I'm thinking, where'd all the money go? He goes, we don't have any money. We can't pay them. Now, there were like 30 1099s. They had each worked more than 25, 30 hours a week. They were owed a significant amount of money. And that's, you know, their paycheck for the week. And I'm supposed to tell them that there's no money? Where'd it all go? And he goes, I took it. I go, what? He goes, it was profit. So I took it. So I said, this is insane. This is not profit. We differ in our version of ethics. I am ethical and you are not. And I quit. I couldn't wait. He asked me to do it again a week later and tell people 2 weeks in a row that there was no money because he had taken it as profit. Well, that's not profit. If you own a business, Jeffrey, and you have salaried employees, and 1 week you can't make payroll. That happens. Cash flow is a real thing, right?
You're the last one to get paid.
Yes. Exactly. You don't pay yourself that week. I wouldn't pay myself that week.
Right.
Anyway, so for me, I left. I just couldn't sleep, you know, at night thinking that I was doing something unethical and facilitating this whole weird money scam.
Wow. So, you know, there's still time to watch this show live on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/JeffreyGittimer, JeffreyGittimer. Post a comment, watch the show, have a good time. And we're going to get back to the show right now, I believe, Jen. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. So now it's time for something a little bit different. We've teamed up with Steiner Sports and Brandon Steiner to bring you some of his sales wisdom.
Mm-hmm. And he's got plenty of it. This is the first in a series of Steiner stories about an ethical bribe. Let's take a look.
All those of you that are parents that, you know, dealing with younger children, well, this is the video for you. You know, my wife one night before we went to sleep, and I always told my kids, you know, I'm not getting up in the morning to dress you, drive you to school. Dress yourselves at a certain point when they're old enough. Walk to school, take the school bus like everyone else. I'm not driving you to school and making life all easy. I walked to school and I got dressed on my own. I made my own breakfast. You can do the same. Don't start coming looking for me to start helping you get going in the morning. Although I always like to wish my kids well in the morning and give them a good hug and a kiss. But in any case, my wife one night, before she went to bed, was upset because you know how hard it is to get your daughter up and get dressed and get ready for school, let alone have breakfast to get her on time. I said, honey, how hard could that be? I mean, really, how hard could that be? So I went in to go see my daughter and I said, listen, Mom says it's impossible to get you ready in the morning. She says she's got to wake you up multiple times. It's almost impossible to get you down and have breakfast to get you to school on time. I don't believe it, but I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you $5 if all I have to do is wake up in the morning, knock on the door, say, Nicole, are you up? And then if you're downstairs eating breakfast and you're ready to go to school on time, $5. Easiest $5 you ever made. Next morning, I wake up, knock on the door, Nicole, are you up? I actually went back the second time just to check on her. She was doing great. Before I know it, she's downstairs, ready to go to school. Perfect, just on time. Says, Dad, what time is it? I said, it's 8:15. What time did I have to be down here by? 8:20, you're down here 5 minutes early. Where's my $5? Here's your $5. That's the easiest $5 I ever made, Nicole told me. I said, easiest $5 you ever made? I bet your mom $10 that you'd be down there. I made $5 and gave you $5. Easiest $5 I ever made. Ethical bribes sometimes work. And sometimes you need to inspire and motivate, even if it's your own kids.
That's a classic.
Love that.
Brandon Steiner
awesome.
Is a classic. Yeah, that's beautiful. Brandon Steiner, for those of you who don't know, is the largest autograph dealer, sports memorabilia dealer in the world. And he's a great guy. And he's got a book called It Takes Balls. He's a brilliant guy. Yeah, go to steinersports.com and buy something from them for Christmas for somebody or Hanukkah for somebody, and you will be absolutely happy that you did, but not as happy as the person that gets it. Now, here's an ethics tip. If you make a bold claim in your advertising, you better live up to it, plus a little bit more. We have friends, and our friends are the makers of Death Wish Coffee. Now you can see for the very first time that Death Wish Coffee is actually the coffee that we drink every single day. Why? Well, it's easy because because it's the greatest coffee on the planet. You got to follow them on Instagram. They're unbelievable.
Their Instagram's amazing.
It's the funniest thing you've ever heard. But go to deathwish.coffee. It is 100% factual, ethical claim that they are the world's strongest coffee, made from the strongest possible combination of perfectly roasted beans in a secret formula.
Oh, yeah. And they have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. We drink it in the studio when we do the show. Now you can see that.
Bingo.
Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
We got a lot of other comments on Facebook, but do you have anything? Doug,
it's time to go out and read comments and questions. That's the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's do it. What do you have for us, Doug?
Oh, I thought you were going to read them.
Oh, okay, I'll read them. Yeah,
we're not reading Jack.
Well,
someone, no, Doug is our designated reader.
Well, no, I don't have the Facebook up now. So
Teresa says, what do you say when a customer asks what does your company do? Our company is very involved, so it's not an easy question to answer.
Huh?
How do you tell someone what your company does if it's a complicated answer? If someone asks, hey, what does your company do?
Come on. How complicated
can it possibly? Figure out how you help them and tell them how you can help.
Or tell how people use your product or service. You don't have to explain what it is. Like, people who buy our stuff do this.
Advice once you drop the ball with customer, how to recover.
It takes 12 positive actions to overcome one negative reaction. That's why roses come in dozens. But you have to interact with your customer in a way where they feel as though the sincerity of your apology is not only genuine, but has a backup to it, an action that you took that absolutely recovers. There's lots of ways to explain it. One of my friends who runs the Grand Hotel in Paris, when they have a customer complaint, he says he never leaves the table from them until he sees them smile. Now, think about that. So he might spend 20 minutes with them.
What if he's with people who never smile?
Well,
I mean, there are people out there who never smile.
That is an issue. But I assure you that this guy has been very, very good at getting people to smile.
Wow. All right, Doug, what do you have from us? Some people submitted questions ahead of time.
Ooh.
Let's hear it.
Are these Reddit.com people with weirdo names?
Reddit.com/r/sales. And we have one ethical dilemma for you from the fine salespeople there at Reddit.com/r/sales. This one comes from Indefinable Mustaches. Indefinable Mustaches writes, I sell trophies to companies that give out awards. Some of my larger clients are starting to offer the award winners the option to have a donation made to a charity on their behalf instead of receiving the awards that I sell to
them.
Why
don't they do both, those cheap bastards?
I'm telling you. Okay, so some of my largest clients are leaning this way, and while I think that's a great thing, professionally, I don't want to lose the sale. So what do you do in that situation?
I would...
What's the ethical thing to do?
Offer a buck or two from every award to donate to a charity. Tell them that you have five charities and ask them to pick theirs. I think that there are ways around this. But I don't think that anybody should give up an award that they've worked their ass off for to donate money to a charity. It's like the airline company asking you to donate your miles. Seriously? You donate the miles, you cheap bastards. I fly like hell for my miles.
Right, I want those miles.
Right.
Well, I think the ethical dilemma that this person is facing is that, you know, if they talk this client out of donating money, that's a little bit of an ethical dilemma because that donation doesn't happen, but he gets the sale, or he or she gets the sale.
The company should match the donation with the cost of the award, period. Mm-hmm.
If they're going to ask for it.
Right. And if you're asking me, if you're, and I'm not going to mention any names because it wouldn't be fair to American Airlines, but if you're American Airlines, you're asking me to donate miles, match me. You know, do something that says I'm in the game as well. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a real small example of it. I guarantee you that you have a grocery store in your city.
Oh, this is so frustrating.
Every time you're at the cash register, they say, would you like to donate a dollar to the Indiana Home for the Criminally Insane or something? And you go, no thanks. Why am I giving money to you to donate to your charity? You got a charity, donate it yourself. Or match me or say, for every dollar you donate, we'll donate 10. Then I would donate. But they're just asking me, then they give the money, they get all the credit, and I get jack. Okay. I'm done with that rant.
All right. So do you want to tell us the one thing about ethics, Jeffrey?
Well, I said it earlier. I think that the ethical test is it the truth? Can I call my mom and brag?
I want to know, can I put it on the front page of the newspaper? Would I be proud if it was on the front page of the newspaper? And if it was, it's probably ethical. If it's not, it's definitely not ethical.
Well, think of that guy from Wells Fargo who got his ass handed to him by Elizabeth Warren, who I'm no fan of. But the bottom line is, she gave him what for in a manner... I don't think I've heard it that clear in Congress ever in my life. I mean, since Watergate, have I not heard it?
Yeah.
Anyway, so here's one thing you have to know about ethics. If you don't know and clearly state your ethics, be it a company or an individual, you risk falling down an ethical hole. And your reputation could be damaged forever. Now, for more information about your reputation, let's send it over to Jen for another New York Minute.
In today's social society, you can no longer get away with anything. Poor quality, high pricing, poor services, they're no longer tolerated, and they're posted online for everyone to see. Your reputation truth is exposed in under 20 seconds and on everyone's smartphone. And in today's social world, the repeat customer, the recommended customer, and the referred customer are the heart of business success. Here are the secrets to reputation, repeat customer, recommended customer, and referral. Transfer your genuine belief. Keyword: genuine. If you love and believe in your products and services, you should have an easy time transferring your passion. Turn your customers into believers, and they too should have an easy time transferring their passion and making referrals. Concentrate on helping, not making commissions. Your help will earn their trust. Trust leads to long-term relationships. Trust leads to repeat business. Trust leads to referrals. Your commissions will follow automatically. Don't sell someone something they don't need or something that won't help them or that they won't benefit from. In other words, only sell something that you believe helps the other guy. Here's the reality. If they get home and they realize they didn't want it, they didn't need it, or they won't benefit from it, You'll be blamed in seconds, and your business reputation will be at risk. Serve and help, not sell. And you'll be on your way to repeat and referral customers in a New York minute. Okay, so if you want more videos, just go to my website, salesinanewyorkminute.com. You can read my blog. You can follow me on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. I'm probably there. Now, thank you for joining us for our first ever live show on Facebook. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll be live on Wednesdays. Oh, yeah. We'll be live on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on my Facebook, facebook.com/JenInAnyMinute.
And my Facebook page, facebook.com/JeffreyGittimer.
Or you can find us on iTunes.
Or anywhere.
Yeah. Thank you to our guest, Eric Chester. Our producer is Doug Branson, and our technical director is Chris Hill. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I want to thank everybody for watching on Facebook Live. And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.